You all weren't chatting amongst yourselves?
Yeah, Dan and me.
Oh, good. Good.
I'm just popped in.
Hi, Tom.
Oh, hi, Tom.
Hi, Ben. Hi, Helen.
Hi.
And Tom, sometime this week, if we want to get together per your request, we can.
Certainly, that'd be great.
Alrighty. I'll be in Boulder, but still, that's quite arrangeable, and I want to do it.
Okay.
Anyone else with us? Any of the ladies? Other than Helen? No, as yet. Well, let's fire up our candles and charge ahead and see who happens by, whether kind or discarded. You just never know. Non-striking pad. Yeah. Table bottoms make nice strike. Is that Magna?
Jimi Hendrix has popped in.
Yeah.
Someone do something.
That's a new one.
I don't know what
was it. I don't either. Well, it stopped, actually.
Is he still there?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, but that noise stopped.
Right.
Did we lose anybody? Dan, you still there?
I'm here.
Tom?
Yeah.
Okay, you all ready to charge your candles?
Mm-hmm.
Let's do it together. One, two, three, and. Child of
wonder.
Child of flame. Nourish
our spirit.
And protect
our flame.
That's I thought Dan said protect our flame, and I said, yeah, that's nice. We could do that. Yeah.
I was more into protecting our aim, but we could protect our flame if we need to.
Yeah, right. Only in high winds. So, Dan, what did you discover from walking in balance?
Discovered when I was out of balance more than anything.
Oh, you too, huh? Ditto. And what did how did it occur to you? How did you see it? I mean, like little surprises, little shocks, little wake up calls. What was the modus operandi?
When I would realize that I wasn't in balance, it would cause me to snap into a clarity.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Ooh, you're so similar in that. And so then what would you do?
Kind of laugh a little bit.
Good. So what did the rest of the world look like to you? The people world and so forth.
Not as serious.
Okay. How was their balance?
Well, that I just wasn't taking it serious.
Right.
Taking their world serious.
Okay.
Really, I guess I don't really take mine all that serious either, but one of the things that has been really, that I've been delving into is reality and the, whether it is, isn't, or matters or doesn't matter or whatever, and that's, I've been kind of rambling around that. So that was some of what was going on with me looking at myself and at other people and thinking what was real, what was not real, what was just perceived.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been the book Fire Within.
Mm-hmm.
And so that has been put some emphasis on what I've been looking at, how I've been thinking about things.
Mm-hmm. Right. It sure does, doesn't it? So what do you conclude about the everyday reality that most people seem to adhere to and perceive?
A lot of it's just not necessary.
Okay. I'll go along with that. Helen, what were your discoveries with walking in balance?
Well, similar to Dan, in that I seem to key into one aspect of my life that feels very out of balance. At the same time, I was noticing other areas that felt more in balance. So I was getting both sides of the spectrum.
And what characterized balance for you?
In one area it felt emotional, in terms of being non-reactive.
Okay.
But in the other sense, where I felt out of balance, it had more to do with a certain void in my life, where things felt skewed.
Okay. And Tom, what was your experience?
Wow. It was just summed up pretty much the same. More than anything, realized my imbalance and that of others around me. I don't know if it's really just my perception of things, but just because of the whirlwind of the last couple of weeks, it's been hard for me to sometimes contain my thought patterns and my emotions. And so it's really been an exercise in recognizing the imbalances more than the balance that I have been walking in. But there's hope, you know, in that exit ritual that there will come a time when I will be walking in the balance that I desire.
Okay. So then it was clear to you, I'm sure, that which you generally refer to as reality, is largely made up of other people's values and opinions and yardsticks.
Yeah, so I believe so. I really have been disassembling a lot of my my beliefs that I grew up with, and so I basically have a lot of pieces laying out in front of me, and I am attempting to, you know, solve a puzzle. You know, I think it's just a personal type of a puzzle, and that I want to recreate or restructure my beliefs into something that works or serves me. I do say that, I do notice that what's going on in the world in general around me, other than this, you know, like let's say the sanctuary of my home, there seems to be a lot of people just kind of just flitting about, going, you know, about their lives, but it doesn't seem like they really have any real inner peace.
That is true. Suggestion that you put more attention and emphasis on observing what you're seeing about your beliefs and values and so forth, don't try to rearrange it.
Okay.
Because you're not got the tools for that yet. And what you more than likely would end up doing is in many cases, throwing out the baby with the bathwater.
Gotcha.
So, but your observations are very, very good. You know, and we're... Our program of study is set up to take care of that for you. So that you don't have to, because if you try to do it at this point, more than likely you'll have to redo it several times later.
I'll just leave it lay then.
Yeah, just leave it lay, but study it.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, and question it, and say, where did that belief come from? Where did that value come from? See if you can track it upstream. That's good. But what you don't have to do is try to change it. That's not important. Cool. Is Jennifer with us?
Yes.
What was your experience with walking in balance?
I found I could walk backwards a lot easier.
Oh, good, yes.
Yeah, that was amazing. I could really, move backwards easy. And I didn't have balance walking backwards before. I had good parts and bad parts, but towards the end it kind of got like, oh, I fell in a hole. I couldn't see that there was a way around it, or it was going to come back around.
So how, when you say you fell in a hole, and that hole was your past?
Yeah, parts of it. Parts not comfortable. A lot of tension, anger, reaction to things that was
sure.
Worthless.
Sure.
But then again, I couldn't, it's okay if you fall in the hole and you can step back out.
Yeah, it is.
It seemed like the hole kept getting bigger and I couldn't get quite back out.
But you asked for help.
Yeah.
And you got help, didn't you?
Uh-huh. But I always have this fear, like I get on the spaceship, it goes out in space, and I can't run the computer, and the computer can only bring me home, so I can't get home.
Yeah, well, that's sort of an apt vision, I would say. Is Randy with us?
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah. And what was your experience, Mr. Randy?
Well, at times, I had a difficult week at work, and at times I would walk out of my building to go somewhere to pick up a client or something, and I'd say it, and it would be like, that's a joke. I'm really in balance.
Okay.
I'm so out of balance.
I know that feeling.
And, it's like, boy, they're really pushing my buttons today. But I kept trying to.
Whoop. Randy, did you disappear? I think his cell phone just exploded.
I think Mercury went retrograde today.
Oh, did it really?
Yeah.
Oh, how nice. Well, hopefully he'll come back. Magnus, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
And what was your experience with walking in balance?
I don't know how to begin. It's funny, but a lot of things worked out beyond my expectation. Things I tried, messages I sent, message boxes.
Mm-hmm. Right.
They worked the way. They worked beyond my imagination. I was like, wow, is this just a coincidence? But I know it's not.
Right.
I wouldn't really give in detail because at the beginning of the week, what happened last session happened again. When we closed, I left and did my walking in balance, when we got out of the class activities.
Right.
So I went outside and did my balance.
Good.
For some reason, the next 2 days, I went back as if something is telling me unconsciously to go back and walk in strength. I walked in strength for 2 days and realized it. I said, wait a minute. I went back walking in balance.
You could have done in strength instead of walking in strength anyway.
Anyway,
was probably good to catch that up.
Yes. So when I went back walking in balance, things were working out marvelously well. And after yesterday, something happened. Which I kind of related like, if I may give this reference in the Bible, they all work for good to those that trust in the Lord. This thing happened, I was so mad, But then, after a few minutes, I said, wait a minute, what if this did not happen? Maybe something more grievous could have happened.
Mm-hmm.
So, and my backup came in handy when I never expected it to be of any use, and I completed whatever I was doing. I saw that yesterday, and things kept on unfolding, and solutions that just, I said, wow. When even at the end of the week, I was thinking, say, hey, I was supposed to be working in balance, and I did. Why are these things coming my way? I tend to sit back and notice that whatever happened was for a purpose, either to avoid the, you know, heavier duty thing that could have happened, or to let me know that what I thought cannot be work well for a backup because of the fault it had.
Oh, okay.
Will Afro work for me, you know?
It worked anyway?
No, it worked marvelously. Even up to now, that's what I'm using.
Okay.
Whatever the old system I was using, I will put it in place when I finish with the classwork.
Sure. Okay. Well, I think what you're pointing out is what I want to point out to everybody is that you can't be out of balance. You're always in balance. However, the balance changes. Remember, what we were doing this week is studying our balances. And we were learning that we can change our balances. So you're always balanced in air, fire, water, and earth in some way. However, it may not suit what your aim is. It may not suit the way you want your life to be going. So then you change your balances. And what I wanted you all to find out is that you have a choice about your balance. It's when I go out and I say walking in balance, however I am, that is the balance I'm walking in. Now what do I want to do next? So then that is the question, what did you do next? And just so I don't forget to mention it, of course, we're walking in harmony this week, coming. Still walking, just walking in harmony. So, what did you do to change your balances this week, Dan? Or anybody else's, but I'm primarily at this point interested in, because we were walking in balance and because we all discovered things about our balance, but what did you do with that?
I had something come up at work where there was a lot of anger again by some of the team members, pretty strong, and they felt pretty out of control, and I didn't catch it in myself right away, but I really started to absorb it, and I felt a sort of struggle to get back into balance. But then once I realized that I was absorbing it, and I made my boundaries stronger, I kind of came back to my own place, which felt much more balanced.
How did you make your boundaries stronger?
Well, a lot of things. One of them including I increased Earth Brown Insulator.
Okay, so you did it magically.
Yeah. I did other things as well.
Such as?
Prayer.
Okay, that's still magic.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah, just, I mean, in terms of what we've covered in class.
Yeah, well, I encourage you, as you're finding out, to do the magical operations that you're learning, because you'll find out that they work, and they work better and better when you do them. And that's what you're doing. That's what you did.
Yeah.
So what was the result of doing that?
Well, it it was very helpful. It felt like night and day between Tuesday and Wednesday.
Okay.
In terms of my reactivity, and I also found myself being less judgmental of the other people and more compassionate, and at the same time, more neutral.
Good. Yeah, that certainly reflects a change of balance, too.
Yeah.
Very good. So, Dan, what did you do?
I don't know that I actually did anything.
Okay.
Other than just make the realization. I do know that, and I don't know exactly what to attribute this to, but I do know that I have become less involved on an emotional level in other people's junk.
Okay.
I don't know if that's a part of that or just an overall thing here, but it's not that I don't care. It's just that I don't allow it to adversely affect me.
Right. And so, you know, now you, of course, said less emotionally involved, and more accurately, you probably are meaning less sensationally involved in a way. I mean, because emotionally, you were more involved in a way, or similarly involved because you cared, but you weren't buying into other people's trips.
Right.
And if you start to break that down, that's generally some air, fire, and perhaps water mix. But we call it water. We call it emotions. But generally it's not. You know, even if you're sitting with a person and they're telling you their pet horror story about their lives, and we sit there and we sort of tisk-tisk and cluck-cluck and so forth and emit empathetic, sympathetic noises, there's very little emotion involved in that. And of course, personally, I would rather sit with the person and laugh. Because it's all very funny anyway, and being sympathetic really does nothing. But it takes a while for people to realize that. But you all know, you've heard that shamans laugh a lot at everything and anything. I mean, just reading Carlos Castaneda's stuff, Don Juan was constantly rolling on the ground with laughter at whatever went on. So?
Well, I'm back, Alan.
Oh, good. So continue, Sir Randy.
Oh, continue with my imbalance?
Yes.
Oh, well, it seems to me that I learned this week that when, you know, if my pond, if all the water is kind of flowing around and the surface is kind of clear and, you know, going my way, it's fine. But if anybody starts rippling my water, you know, I start feeling out of balance. And so...
How do they ripple your water, Randy?
Well, difficulties at work, difficulties with communication, with procedures that were messed up that weren't set up properly to where things would flow the way they're supposed to.
Okay. Was that something that you had control of?
No, I didn't have any control over it.
Okay.
All I had control over were, I guess, my emotions, which at a couple of times seemed to want to get a little angry
Okay, now as you probably recall, those are not emotions.
Ah.
Those are reactions.
Reactions, yes.
Right.
Yes.
So let's not label them emotions because we get sort of confused.
Right.
You know,
yeah, my reactions, I guess, would...
Now, what dictates your reaction?
Well, I want to say, my level of comfort with the other end of the stimulus that I'm getting. If I'm comfortable with what the other person is saying or what's going on with our interaction, then my reaction bends to that, you know.
Okay. So what you're indicating is that you have sort of a comfort barometer. And according to the gate or the pointer on your comfort barometer, you react in certain ways.
Yeah, unfortunately, yes.
Okay. Now, if that were true, I would applaud you, but it isn't. That's an illusion.
Ah.
Because that would at least indicate some level of intention.
Hmm.
I'm going to suggest that your reactions are society's appropriate behavior mechanisms.
Yeah.
That
okay.
You react in certain ways to conditions at work because you've been taught that that's what makes everyone think that you're an appropriate human being.
Yeah.
And I'm going to further suggest that that is folly.
Mm-hmm.
That all that it gives you is more mechanicality and more of that which made you react, which you say made you react in the first place, i.e., it attracts chaos.
Okay.
Because reaction always attracts chaos.
All right. I want to go by that one more time about the mechanicality of my reaction.
Well, because you are reacting according to a set of value systems that society has set up.
Yes.
That if I don't do what you expect of me, then you're supposed to react so that you're consistently in the behavioral pattern of normal human beings, and we're all playing this consistency game.
I see. Yeah.
And what I'm suggesting to you as a magician and a shaman, when you stop reacting and start acting according to an actual choice on your part, not only will you become invisible to everybody there, but you will be in control of everything that happens there. Because no one will understand how you can possibly be behaving, they will not be able to interpret your behavior. And not only that, your balance will be very different from their balance. But it will also become apparent that synchronicity is on your side, not on their side. I.e., therefore, when others are failing, you will shine.
Hmm.
And as a result of that, you will get lavished praise and rewards of all kinds. I'm just showing you a picture that's very different from the picture that you're believing in.
Yes.
And this is the purpose of what we're doing here.
Ellen, do you ever find that people get envious or jealous of that kind of a response?
Absolutely.
Because that's what I'm finding happens at work when I disengage.
Of course. of course, there's not only envy or jealousy or mystery, there's suspicion, distrust, there's all kinds of things, none of which is important. Because you're not doing it to affect them, you're doing it to affect you.
Yeah.
But this is the whole point of a magical study. This is the premise of beginning to control our intent, which is really our connection to the spirit of intent. And that's sort of what Magnus introduced the idea, because he said everything was going south, but he did the things that seemed right to do anyway, and they worked. Even though in a certain sense it didn't make sense, right, Magnus? Did we lose Magnus?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, so in other words, your something higher in you told you what to do, even though your logical computer expert mind said, no, that can't work.
Yes.
But it worked anyway.
It worked anyway.
Right. See what I'm getting at, Helen?
Yeah.
Brandon, do you see it?
Yes.
So, this is why we're studying. This is the nuts and bolts of it right here. It's because if you like being in control, be in control. But this is how. It's not through the other ways. So, you all getting it? Is this getting through?
Helen, there was something I read in the Fire Within book that talked about the shaman, the way they strive to do things was to be in control without anyone knowing they were in control.
That is right. That is right, because the mechanisms of their control, or our control, are vastly different from what society thinks control is. Isn't that right, Dan?
Yes.
So what you guys are learning is real control. Now, I don't call it control. You will, but I don't. I call it real creation. Because that's what it actually is. You're learning to create. So, Tom, what did you do to change your balances?
The first thing that seemed to make sense was I had to go back and make copies of all of the excesses and shortages of all of the elements.
Okay.
Kind of analyze, you know, what has been going on this week within myself. And I have also had that same experience of re-scripting this week and realizing that just because other people are in chaos, that does not mean that I have to be. So I went through really systematically each of the excesses and shortages and all of the different colors and kind of wrote myself a prescription, you know, of boxes that I needed to release or, you know, take in. And so
good for you.
Just started to work, you know, in that area.
That's wonderful. So then what did you notice?
Well, I noticed that, you know, sometimes I expect instant results and they don't always happen instantly, but inevitably they do happen.
Okay.
And, I mean, it's helped a lot, you know. I think it helps to take a look at life, you know, maybe from a different or fresh point of view or perspective.
Absolutely.
And learn how to be proactive, you know, while others around us are just simply reacting.
And it's correct. In fact, because you're in the situation you're in, I'll tell you a real short little story about one of our other students in one of the other courses, who is a legal, paralegal, and has been for some 25 years, and she's very good. But her career has gone up and down tremendously, and for whatever reason, she's continually works for lawyers that are scumbags, or whatever you want to call them, shoddy, shady, and do weird things, and don't pay her, and so on. So finally she got fired from her last shoddy job, and she said, this is it. So she went ahead and set up a grow spell for her career, and set up a grow, another spell, a candle spell, to lose weight, and so forth and so on. And within a month's time, now this is in a field in Boulder where everybody is hurting in that field, she landed the best job she's ever had for a very stable bunch of lawyers and a judge who are making good money, have no problem paying her more than she's ever been paid before, but much in terms of what she asked for, fewer hours than she's ever worked before, which is also what she asked for in her spell. And then with her candle spell to lose weight, she lost 30 pounds in a month.
Wow.
So,
was she eating the candles, Alan?
Probably. So.
No, that's encouraging. It really is.
Well, that's proactive.
Sure.
You know, so. Mm-hmm. There's,
right. Sometimes it's a very good thing to hit the wall, you know. And I think that I suspect that that's what happened with this individual, and that's certainly kind of how I've perceived this.
Exactly.
This week, but it's not always a bad thing.
It's never a bad thing, unless you're not studying magic. Because if you're not doing something to elevate the level of your intent, then yes, whatever happens is by law of accident. And there is no control. There's no creativity. Cool.
How is she dealing with all that?
How is she dealing with it?
Yeah. Take it all, or is it?
Oh, yes, she can take it very nicely.
Gonna pull backwards, or?
I'm sorry?
But sometimes when something comes along, it shocks you so bad that you kind of regress, or you can't.
No. She's been working with us too long to do that.
Oh.
She knows better.
Okay.
No, she's in seventh heaven. Or maybe it's eighth or ninth. I forget which one.
Alan.
I'm sorry?
Hmm?
Somebody say something?
Yeah, Alan, this is Randy. Now, she did spells. We haven't...
You'll get there.
We'll get there.
Yeah. Yeah, we're way... You got to learn your groundwork first.
Yeah. Right.
Is learning how to balance like you all are doing, how you're studying, is part of... You need that. Because when you work with spells, you're working with a lot of program factors. You know, and you need to have a sense of how to bring all these factors together. But it's just the same mechanisms we're doing. Just a little different context. So, Jennifer, what did you do to change your balances?
I did boxes.
Okay.
Relief or whatever.
Right.
Well, like the sore knee and the hip. Like last time you said, suggest some brown boxes and green boxes and that. And I worked with that and, oh, it was good for a bit.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't make it last.
Well, and do you understand why you couldn't make it last?
No, I don't.
Well, because... You are working with peripheral balances relative to a specific, say, physical symptom, but the cause of all of that was being unaddressed.
Okay.
The cause of that is the way you see your life.
So how do I fix that? How do I don't see it. I got a depressing life or something, but it seems like everything's so wonderful. I shouldn't feel this way.
Well, so then the evidence of your life does not match your attitudes, does it?
Okay.
So, and your attitudes are relative to your balances and relative to your beliefs and relative to your values. So, the evidence of your life says that you have the income in the physical realm that make for a good life. But you have beliefs and values and balances that don't make for a good life. So which would you change?
Beliefs and values.
Exactly. And our studies are set up to do exactly that.
Ellen, it's Helen. I'm not quite sure if your beliefs and values are contrary. Isn't it sort of like what's outside reflects what's going on inside? So
yes.
Why would the evidence be one way when your beliefs are contrary to that?
Because your aim, because you're studying this, is being clarified. And so what happens is you start to experience the reality of your contradiction closer to home, inside yourself rather than outside yourself.
Okay.
That's an indication that you are taking, in other words, you are receiving the message. You understand?
Uh-huh.
You're not denying it. This is like years ago when we were studying astrology, a long time ago. We started looking at the transits that were going to come up in our charts, instead of particularly the harsh ones, the more difficult ones, challenging ones, like Saturn square Sun, stuff like that, Saturn square Moon, Uranus square Saturn, all those kind of things.
Right.
And instead of waiting until they happen to say, oh yeah, look at what this did to me, we would figure out what the lesson was and do it ahead of time. And lo and behold, the transit would come and you wouldn't even notice it. Because you'd already satisfied it. And that's when we realize absolutely beyond any belief from a place of knowing that transits are merely lessons. And that if you get the message and you honor that and you respond, rather than react, the messenger is no longer needed.
Right. I think I have that part. I guess I still don't feel clear though why the evidence of your life would be contrary if you're believing one thing. I thought it would be reflected in your life.
The way you see it is reflected in your life.
Okay.
But but Jennifer's talking about, she looks at the, you know, as a scientist would do, she looks at the evidence. She says, I have a good home. I have a wonderful child. I have plenty to eat. I'm not suffering any grievous, horrible illness. I have nice people around me, and so on and so on. And why do I feel so crummy?
Yeah.
So what I'm saying is that's very good. That's very good assessment. And then what you end up with is, I feel crummy because I have values and beliefs which are not matching what I came here for. And they're not even matching who I am.
But so your life can be going smoothly even if your belief systems don't support that.
Oh, a lot.
Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, a lot of people do that. You know, your life can be smooth. I mean, I know millionaires and even billionaires whose lives are very smooth and they are miserable. Absolutely miserable. I mean, you wouldn't believe the stories. I mean, right in my wife's family, people who have built $10 million homes with many floors, and they have a floor for each of their children to come and visit, and their children never come and visit. I mean, just ridiculous stuff.
Yeah.
guy that's a billionaire, and he has all these elaborate bedrooms and incredible rooms in his house, and he lives in many kitchens. He lives in the smallest kitchen. He has his bed in the kitchen.
Yeah. So would it be safe to say that they have a belief that making and spending money is no problem? That's the part where...
No, they have a belief that says that power and control in terms of owning money and having leverage over other people is what produces happiness and fulfillment.
Okay. If you had a belief that you can't make money or have money, isn't it more likely that you wouldn't have that in your life then, money?
Yes.
Okay. That's what, okay.
Yeah, like the lady up in Alaska that's a famous homeopath and treats people all over the world, and she can't understand why she's feeling so horrible and having a, she's never well and she's, you know, getting worse and all of a sudden nothing is working in her life. And she came to one of my students and said, I don't understand what's going on, and I guess I've got to come to you because I can, nothing I can do makes me better. And then as she was telling her all this stuff, her story, I call it, she also said, told my student what her belief was. Her belief is that, well, if you're a famous healer, you can't be well.
Mm-hmm.
Because you work... You take in everybody else's illnesses, or something like that.
Uh-huh.
Well, that's a ridiculous belief.
Yeah.
But she's living it.
Yeah.
And she has to take that. If she wants to get well, she has to take that down.
Mm-hmm.
She has to disclaim it. So you all are studying this, and Jennifer, you're learning the process. It's not an overnight process. You didn't get here to this point overnight either. But I'll tell you, the good news is it won't take you 40 years, it won't take you 30 years, it won't take you 20 years, it won't even take you 10 years to undo all that.
Good.
Yeah, well, indeed. Because otherwise it'd be quite depressing and we'd have to do it anyway. Because we got here. Nobody put us here. We got here. And we're going to get ourselves out of here, wherever here is that we don't like. So, Randy, what did you do to change your balances?
Well, I didn't do any magic. I did what I know has worked for me in the past. And that was... coming home from work and resting on the couch for about 30 minutes and then going and doing some vigorous exercise for a couple hours.
Okay. Did it work?
Yes.
Okay. How did you find out that worked?
Well, I guess a number of years ago when I started exercising and I started noticing I had more energy.
Okay, not by experience.
Yes, from experience.
Okay, how are you going to find out that magic works?
From experience.
I think so.
Yes.
So Magnus,
what is the only way I can find out?
That's the only way I know that you can.
Yeah.
And Magnus, what did you do to change your balances?
I did Gruden.
Good. Did that help?
It helped. I did that even before this began to happen.
So you had an anchor point to work from.
I'm sorry?
You had an anchor point to work from.
Yes, I suppose. And when I finished doing it, I did it for a long time and I felt... everything is good and believe things are going to work out for the best. And I think they did.
Yes, I agree. And so the point is, when you do magical acts, you get results different from what you your mind would tell you. Randy, that's my whole point. I'm not saying it isn't good to do what you did.
Oh, yeah.
Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But I'm saying you can increase your amazement, you know, beyond just getting a predictable result.
Yes. Okay.
You know, because you see, what you're doing is you are negotiating your stress.
Negotiating.
Yes, you are negotiating your stress. You don't get stress from anybody else. Stress is something that happens within you. But the conditions at work are that which cause you to react in stressful ways. So then what you do is you come home and you negotiate your stress.
Oh, I see.
And what we're suggesting to you by your classmates' examples and by what we're studying and so forth is that you can, instead of negotiating your stress, you can start, say, altering the conditions at work.
Yes.
Through sly and clever, magical, lip-grinning ways.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what we're going to talk about tonight. We're going to talk about ways of self-defense. But they're more than self-defense, they are self-offense. They are ways of creating and maintaining sacred space. Because as you all have all noticed, it's sort of a war zone out there. And people do all kinds of things. Bosses and employees and fellow workers and office doohickeys and whatever. Whether we're talking about humans or machines or whatever, it's all going on out there. And so our training is to know how to determine what is going on, to also assess whether we have the right to change it or not, and then to create a plan and go ahead and effectively change it. So the first part of that is to understand when you have the right and when you don't have the right to apply any means of self-defense, which basically means to take control outside of yourself. You all understand that. We're not talking about inner self-defense. I'm not teaching you now how to deal with your own archetypes. That's another course. I'm telling you how to deal with other people and other energies external to yourself. But you already have methods of self-balancing. That's, at this point, how you maintain your inner self. And, of course, what we want to do is to act appropriately to avoid any sort of universe response. Okay? So, you, as a created being, have every right to be here and every right to walk your path and to do your creation and to assist humanity, not just humanity, to assist all beings, to assist the planet, to see that life is maintained in an orderly fashion. There's a lot of things you have a right to. And you have a right to do that without being interrupted as long as you don't interrupt anybody else's right. in the same way. So, here's the rule when it comes to any form of outer defense or self-defense. It says, in cases of direct and mortal harm, you are entitled to defend yourself by any means available, provided you did nothing to encourage or provoke the attack. Okay, so let's make sure that we understand that statement. It says, in cases of direct and mortal harm, personal harm, or it may say direct and violent personal harm. I like mortal, frank, a little better because it refers to actual loss of life. Direct means upon your mind, body, or spirit. Does not mean only on the body. Any outside force or influence that drains your energy or imposes someone else's will or some other will other than your own upon you will qualify very nicely. That's also known as vampirism. Okay. Violent or mortal, whichever. Anything that's damaging to your physical, mental, emotional, or spiritual well-being. And it doesn't mean that the person has to intend that. It's if they're doing it even non-intentionally. It doesn't matter.
But, Alan, what if, you know, if we are the ones that are causing our stress and...
That's internal.
Yes.
I said we're, in this class, this particular material, only looking at the external.
Yes, but what if I interpret the external as an attack when it really isn't? It's just someone else... being themselves, but I'm, because of my makeup, personality, or whatever, I'm reacting.
Okay, then that's your applied significance.
Mm-hmm.
And that's your responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
That's why this says direct or mortal threat.
Ah.
Because... just because someone, say, is calling you names, they're calling you a shmooga, and you say, boy, shmoogas are the worst thing in the world. I would never, ever call anybody a shmooga. That's your significance. They are not threatening you. You get it?
Yeah.
Now, on the other hand, supposing they are playing very loud music in the next cubicle, and you're having a lot of trouble even concentrating, not much less even meditating, that is invading your sacred space.
Yes, it is.
Okay. Now, it also, this formula says that you did not encourage this activity. Means creating or permitting unnecessary opportunities for someone to do these things.
I have a question, Alan.
Yeah.
I'm sorry to cut in.
No, that's what you're here for.
Something happened to me, in February, precisely, that almost got me in jail if I had, sat down and let them take care of falling into the police trap.
Okay.
Instead, I hired a lawyer.
Right.
And it even had to link to the government department.
Okay, just tell the part we need to hear.
Okay. Now, the part, my question is, if I do anything within my reach, even prayer, does that qualify as the self-defense?
Yes.
And I will not be accountable to whatever consequence she goes through.
Correct. Okay. In other words, if she provoked an attack upon you in any way, and you do something, whatever is available to you, whether it be prayer or whatever, you are not accountable. That is correct.
Okay. Thanks for that.
Because it says by any means available, doesn't it?
It is.
Yeah. It says using any means you choose to defend yourself when attacked, as long as you did nothing to provoke the attack.
That's correct.
You know, being excessively pushy, when you know someone has a sore spot, you know, you all understand this stuff. You know what provoking is. On the other hand, if you go around teasing someone all the time, have you known people who do that? They tease people? That could be provoking. It's not useful activity. A lot of waste of energy anyway. Okay. So these are the conditions. These are the rules. Okay. Now, how do we do it? Okay. Now, it is true that your awareness and your need for sacred space because of your studies is going to increase and so forth. That's not important. Whatever you consider sacred space is what you consider to be sacred space. If someone is violating it, it doesn't mean you can't ask them to stop violating it. You don't. But if they continue, then you have means available to you. And later on, we'll even learn if you've got a whole bunch of people next door to you or down the block, we'll teach you how to move them to Los Angeles instead. Unless you live in Los Angeles, then you probably should move. And the reason I say that is that years ago we decided to send all undesirables to Los Angeles. There's a lot of them there. Okay. Now, rooting and grounding, you already know. So that's one of the reasons we taught you, is because that is a one of the means of self-defense. Because if you're going to pull somebody's fire down, to be able to effectively do that, a lot of times you may not have as good a ground as you need, or it may not be close enough to get physically on that ground, electrical ground, and you may need to root as well to make darn well sure you're getting rid of all that charge. Because you may need to handle a lot of energy. Okay, so some of the stories that you all have been telling about stress at work, people getting angry at work, you know now how to ground that out. I suggest that's what you need to be doing. I further suggest if you're not doing it, you are setting yourself up by complicity or compliance, whatever the word is. Is that the word? Who's the word master? Dan, is that the right word?
Works for me.
Okay.
Would it be duplicity?
It might. Yes, I accept that. Thank you. It's one of those.
Does that mean duplicities?
Yeah, right. Several duplicities. So, you don't want to allow your sacred space to be invaded, because then you're allowing someone to practice poor behavior. On the other hand, we don't go around looking for people to teach lessons. That's totally another sphere. Okay. So, now these methods, as they are in your notes, are for severe situations. But in every case, the same method can be used for less severe applications. And so with hand lightning, this is how to actually throw lightning bolts at someone. You can kill a person that way, very nicely. You can knock a cow down, or a charging bull, very nicely. It takes not only just, it's not that it takes practice. It either takes practice or it takes being able to handle a lot of charge. I.e., these techniques will not work well when you're just mildly concerned. They work extremely well when you're totally involved. As many other things, like years ago, I found out that when I was leaving Boulder to go on a 3-month motorcycle trip to see my wife, who I was not living with anymore, she was living in San Francisco, but she had moved, and I did not know where she lived, nor had a right phone number or anything. And I didn't want to leave without knowing where she was, because when I got there, I didn't know how I would find her. And all physical attempts to find her did nothing. But as the day of departure came closer, the level of my need to find her got a lot stronger, and lo and behold, she called me the night before I left. And said she had an irresistible urge to call me. Well, if I were only mildly interested in locating her, that probably would not have happened. Okay, so the idea with hand lightning is that you are taking all the energy that you can get from anywhere, and you're throwing it back at the person. So you use your own anger, you use your own frustration. If you, like an actor, can sum up all the hurt and anger and frustration you've gone through, every incident, every lifetime, all at one moment, you will get quite a nice, strong lightning bolt. On top of that, you're pulling energy from the person that's coming at you. And the provoker. You are getting all the energy from them you can, and then instead of grounding or rooting, you allow it to build up, and then you sort of cock your output hand out to the side, bent up towards the sky, and then you, when you've got all that charge and you're shaking and everything with it, you simply lower your arm and shoot. You pulled all the energy in, and then you aimed, and this is just like you were working with candles, shooting at the candles with your first two fingers. And your palm facing down. And in this case, you would direct, if you want to knock the person down, you aim at either their third eye, or their throat chakra, or the heart area. And of course, you're primarily using red orange for that. Now, the second stage of that, that's at a distance. Even more reliable is lightning rodding, which means that in this case, the person now is in contact with you. You're doing the same thing, and it may be you started it even before they grab you or they're in contact with you. You're building up the energy. Now, in both cases, do not involve yourself psychically with the person, i.e., there's no battle of wits here, there's no push and shove, this is a clean operation. You build the energy and send the energy, that's all. Otherwise, there's no need or reason or purpose in communication of any kind, hostile or otherwise. This is an attacker and you're handling that attack. That's all. Straight and simple. Now, very similar to Aikido, when someone grabs you, at the point they grab you, you should already have built up a lot of energy. At the point when they grab you, what most people do is they resist and pull back. They try to get away. You don't. If anything, all you need to do is relax. Because as you relax, you want to pull whatever energy from them you can, because it'll enter you quicker if you relax. So slightly go limp even. And that way they will even put more energy, they will even hold you up. You're taking more of their force. Move towards them. That will shock them. That will really surprise them. And as you do that, like I say, you're pulling their energy in. You've got all that energy coming to you. Now, at the point where you go towards them and you go limp, they will stiffen, and then you'll notice in one instant, as you really move towards them, they will relax, and that's when you return it. They'll relax because as soon as you start going towards them, they want to get away. And so a lot of the tension they're sending to you will suddenly change mode, but they won't have time to go in to pull away. It'll just be a sudden letting go of that tension, and then you just take your right foot hand or anything you goggle and tap them on the forehead, between the eyes, in the throat, or on the heart, and let the whole thing go, and they'll go down. They'll go down really hard. And I've had students do this. So now, once that happens, I suggest that what you want to do is simply walk away. Just leave the area. You have no obligation to take care of that person irregardless of what happens after that. If for some reason you choose to call an ambulance or stay there, for whatever reason, do not tell anybody what you did. First of all, they won't believe you, and second of all, they'll think you're nuts, and it'll just complicate the issue. If suddenly doctors and whatever's arrive, and you just say, well, they must have been on drugs or something, because I don't know, they grabbed me, and the next thing I know, they fell over, and they started shaking all over and foaming at the mouth, and there they are, and then they went still. I don't know what their problem is. That's all you need to say. So, any questions on these techniques so far?
No.
No one? Everyone's with us on this?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, fireballs is a long-distance method that's a little different. It's different from a lightning bolt because that's in the immediate situation at the moment. The person is there, 20 yards away, whatever. But fireballs is a way to deal with an adversary who's not there, right in front of you. And yet you still know that they are provoking an attack. Maybe they have been for a long time. There could be different kinds of attacks. They may be discrediting you to your friends or other people, your employers, whatever. Spreading malicious stories about you. Doing magical acts against you. Whatever. There's also many uses of fireballs. Defense is just one of the methods or uses. You can actually heat an entire room with a fireball. You can light an entire room with a fireball. You can build one on a candle flame and use a single candle flame from even just a white candle in just about any size room or even outdoors if it's not too windy. You can build the aura of that candle so large with fireballs that you can read easily.
For your electricity bill.
Yeah, you can. And like I say, you can actually use a single candle flame and heat an entire room. And it's very easy to do. In fact, one of the things I want you to practice, because you may not get a chance to do all of these different methods of self-defense as homework, although it'd be good to practice some of them, but I definitely want you all to build fireballs and light up your room, and then I want you to go outside and look at it. Go outside before you do it and go outside just with a single candle lit in that room and see how bright it is. You can even use a light meter and measure it if you want to. And then build it up and see. You'll be really surprised.
Where is this in our notes?
Under 7 fireballs.
Okay, I'll have to go back and check that out.
You don't have it?
Well, what I have downloaded goes up to class 10.
Well, this is class 11.
Okay.
That's probably why you don't have it.
That would explain it.
That would, wouldn't it? Okay, how do you build a fireball? Now, even before I tell you how you build them, these can be done in any color. It's called a fireball, but it isn't just with fire energies. You can do water fireballs, air fireballs, earth fireballs. They are energy balls. We call them fireballs. Don't get confused. Now, unlike boxes, see, an energy box and a fireball are just two methods of building energy forms. But as you recall, we started learning the elements by going through the colors and characteristics with energy boxes. And the reason we did that was because they are non-self-cohesive. They do not stay together well. I.e., it's easy to build them and it's easy to get rid of them. Fireballs are not like that. You build a fireball and you sit it down somewhere, it's going to stay there until it hits a target, or it gets a target. You can play practical jokes with them. You can build air, fire, water, or earth, fireballs, and when you invite people over to tea or to dinner or for entertainment, you can set them on their chairs and see what happens. Yellow orange ones are very exciting on the lower part.
Does it hurt people?
No, not really.
Okay.
It isn't quite as, because most people are not, say, that used to energy experiences. It isn't like they sat on a hot seat. But more than likely, what you notice if you do build one and they do sit on it, they'll start agitating, moving around a lot, itching, scratching themselves, and so forth. It is sort of a practical joke thing. Whether or not it has karmic return is, you know, it's again at the level of we play practical jokes on people all the time. Sometimes it's more harmful than other times. These are fairly innocuous. You're not hurting, you're not undertaking to hurt somebody. Somebody in class did it, I don't remember who it was, and they were just so excited waiting for these people. They didn't like the people that much either that were coming over to visit. And darn, they had a plan, so they put them either in the dining room, the living room, I don't remember which, but where they expected everybody would sit. And the people, darn if they just didn't go in that room and then immediately go into the next room and sit somewhere else. They would not go there. but fireballs also are very effective for message sending, but this is not the same as message boxes. This is of a whole different level. This is when you're dealing with somebody that is provoking in some way, and you're sending them a message that says, stop it, and stop it now. However you determine to load that fireball. So when you put that message in it and their faith in it and you send it, it is going to make an impression. A strong psychic impression, and often a physical impression too. Okay, how you make there? Have most of you seen Karate Kid 1?
Yes.
Anybody who hasn't?
I don't think I have.
It's worth seeing because Miyagi makes it. You'll see exactly how to do it. You can also use them for healing, just like energy boxes. Do you remember how he did it, Helen?
No, it's too long ago for me.
Oh, it's such a powerful part of the movie. He claps his hands together. You don't remember that? And rubs them vigorously?
No, I don't remember that. I'll re-rent it, though.
Yeah, that's how he does it. You cup your hands into a ball shape and then you clap them together. And then you rub your palms, keeping them cupped, and pull energy through your elbows into the ball. And it gets more energy and more energy. And then you program it. If you do them and apply them directly to an injury, like with Sun Yellow or grass green or whatever, they're very healing and have a lot of energy. You can really feel them. You can also build them the way you would build a snowball, in that you pull from a color source, compress the energy into a ball, moving your hands much as you would if you were building a snowball, pulling energy in through your elbows at the same time, flowing energy down into the ball, and building it, sort of mushing it clockwise and so forth. Or top hand clockwise, bottom hand counterclock, that kind of a thing, if you want more spin.
Alan, if you're using it for healing, can you throw it anywhere at the person?
But if you're using it for healing, you just take in where you want it.
Okay.
You know, like someone wrenched a muscle, or they fell down and bruised themselves, or they got a burn, and you pulled fire. You've already done that. You've already done the emergency stuff. And then you're going to do the next stage, which is to repair the damage, you know?
Uh-huh.
That's when you do the fireball.
Okay.
You know, you want to clear the excess heat first, obviously.
Right.
So then, the candle flame method, the one I want you all to explore and practice, it's not saying don't practice the other ones, but the candle flame method, you need to work, first of all, in a dark room, still room, not a lot of air movement, it won't work. You light a single candle, and you first look at the size of the aura of the candle flame. Not the flame itself, the aura that's around it, the glow, the halo. It should be about 2 to 3 inches. Does anyone not know what I mean by the halo? Good. It's that glow that surrounds the candle flame. About 2 to 3 inches out. Okay, so what you do is you take your hands, cupped like a bowl, and you go down close to the bottom of the candle. Candle flame is burning, candle's burning, and you come up not too fast. And there is, I'm sure, a video clip on this. But you want to come up and sort of pick the aura up off the candle flame. And you lift it about a foot or two above the candle flame. And as you do that, you compress it, the aura. Now, not the candle flame, the aura. And you flow energy into it, down your arms, and sort of compress it like you would be packing an energy ball just for a few seconds, and then you carefully drop it back on the candle flame. And as you drop it on, obviously going on your hands on either side of the candle flame, an inch or two away, you move quickly your hands out from the candle flame at the level of the flame about 6 or 8 inches. And then you look and you'll see now the aura is that big. It's 6 or 8 inches out instead of 2 or 3. You pick it up again and compress it again. Flow energy into it. Drop it on the candle flame again. Move your hands out about 2 feet. Now you'll see the aura is 2 feet wide. Do it again. Move them out 3 feet on either side as far as you can reach. And then the last time you do it, just put your hands out towards the walls on either side, palms up. Extend it as far as you can. And then go outside and look at the light in that room. It'll look like the electric lights are on. Sit in that room for a while and you will leave because it'll get too hot. Now at any time, you can recompress that aura off the candle flame and build a fireball out of it. In that case, the color of the candle, the body of the candle, will determine the color of the fireball. Any questions on any of these techniques? Dan?
That's
You've used some of these, haven't you?
Yes, I have.
Yeah. Anything you want to tell people about them?
I did have some fun with the dog.
Oh, what'd you do?
I didn't use a fireball, but I did use the a box Sun Yellow.
Okay.
And set it down and watched the dog sniff around it.
And that's what he did?
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
And then he walked right through it.
Helen, any questions on any of these techniques?
No, none at this point.
Tom? Did we lose Tom?
No, I'm still here, and I'm just trying to download this information. So I have been listening, but I'll go over this again when I get it on my computer.
Oh, okay. Okay. But it all made sense to you?
Yes, it did.
Okay. Jennifer, questions or comments?
Now, when you're running your hand up the candle,
mm-hmm.
do you just use one hand or you use both?
No, both hands, because you need to scoop it up like you're picking it up in a bowl.
And then if you didn't drop it back onto the candle, you just make your ball dance? Like a snowball?
No, you pick it up, the aura up, and then you compress it by rounding your hands around it. And sort of packing it more densely, and then as you drop it back on the candle flame, you're holding it like in a bowl again. So you bring both hands down on either side of the flame.
So you drop it and then bring your hands down?
You bring your hands apart, not down.
Oh, okay.
You bring it down, you set it back on the candle flame. You don't drop it. You don't open your hands and drop it. You bring your hands down to the candle flame, setting the compressed aura on the candle flame.
Okay.
But as you then set it on in sort of one pretty easy moving motion, then quickly move your hands out apart.
Okay.
And each time you move them a little further out, you'll see that the flame, halo of the flame, will open up to that degree.
Okay. Then if you use the fireball, you just put it back on the candle?
I'm sorry, say it again.
If you want to keep the fireball, you just not put it back on the candle?
Oh, build it up until it's a good size and then compress it down again and then program it. Yeah.
Oh.
Build it up a number of times so you get a good energy one.
Oh, okay.
So you want to fill the whole room with it. And then scoop it up again and compress it way down. Now you've got a nice fireball.
Okay.
Randy, any questions?
You're saying, Alan, that the color of the candle would correspond with the energy?
Yeah, right. In other words, when you light a candle, the energy you get from it, with one exception, is the color of the body of the candle.
Mm-hmm.
The one exception is electric blue, and you all are not working with electric blue yet. Electric blue you can get from any color candle. Because you pull it from the flame, not from the candle.
Hmm. So if you had a water blue colored candle, you would have a water blue energy ball.
Correct.
Okay.
That is so.
And once you blow out your candle, is the energy dispersed, or do you have?
No. The energy, because it's a color matrix, is still there. But the lighting of the candle delivers the energy to you because fire is radiative, right?
Okay.
So because when you light the candle, you are radiating that color energy all in all directions. So when you want to pull it, you already have it coming at you. It's sort of like anger. you know, or joy or anything. You know, if there's a lot of it happening where you are, it's very available, right? Magnus, any questions?
I don't think there's any question. I think I'm so much in balance right now that when I think of a question, either you give the answer or somebody will ask that question. I don't know what to say.
Yes, yes, you holy man, you.
Alan, can you ever use scented candles?
Yes, but... it's tricky in a way because the you have to know what the elemental mix of the scenting is. In other words, that influences it. When we actually next week we'll study that.
Oh, okay.
Not specifically in terms of a scented candle, but all different odors or scents. See, because when you're using a fireball, you burn materials in it. And according to the kind of material you use, it produces different elements.
Uh-huh.
And of course, when we study candle spells, we'll also be talking about how you not only what we call anoint them and carve them, meaning like you carve symbols on the candles, and you also color those symbols. But even further than that, you can use essential oils, you can use cooking sauces, you can use just about anything that you can imagine to paint onto the candle to achieve different elemental mixes for desired effects.
Oh, great.
You know, so in that sense, therefore, odors are very useful because they all break down into four elements, as do sounds.
Uh-huh.
And we'll study sonics later on, too.
If I have a candle that I know from experience I find soothing, it would that be okay then to... I have some like green candles that are scented with pine or fir.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know specifically how they're, you know, what... oils were used to do that, but I've gotten a good response from them just using them.
Right. Well, what you've got there is you've got a green candle, and you've got pine and fir energy, which is basically sun yellow.
Okay. Because, yeah, I really like them.
Yeah, so you are drawn to the mixture of green and sun yellow.
Yeah. Okay.
And that feels calming or nourishing to you or whatever. By the same token, you probably, if you took in sun yellow boxes and green boxes, you'd probably get pretty much the same effect.
Uh-huh. And I have another question. Can we apply the fireballs to ourselves then? As well as other people.
Sure.
Yeah. Okay.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's the same way you can do boxes
for
yourself.
Right. Okay.
Sure. It's just that one of the things I wanted you all to realize is with a fireball is they are permanent until they hit a target. I mean, the target may sit on them, thus hitting the target.
Sorry. I'm never going to your house for dinner.
Well, you're coming for a treatment.
I know. But it's my intention.
Yes, yes. Well, you don't know what my intentions are.
I know. Uh-oh. The Saddle Motel will never be the same.
Yes, yes. That's right. It'll be fun.
So a box will just kind of pull itself apart?
Yeah, boxes they're not cohering because of the square structure like that, you know?
Yes.
Anything it hits sort of easily breaks it apart. Or even if you just set it down, they'll stay together for a little while, but then they sort of tend to fall apart because we've just sort of compressed them in three directions of space. Whereas in a few weeks, we'll be doing omnos, which are almost like energy balls that we build in three dimensions, matter, space, and time. And they're spinning. And those darn things stay together for a long time. Air ones not as much as fire ones, but so we use those for shields and so forth. See, it's like everything builds. You're learning techniques that you don't realize, but then down the road a little bit, that technique will turn into something else and be used for something else. And it's kind of the way this course works. And then through all of this, you'll actually study the Tarot not from books, but from everything you've learned about doing recognition exercises, doing fireballs, doing energy boxes, doing healing work, handling element energies, doing water bowls, doing water exchange with people, doing all these different operations, then will inform you of what the Tarot is, and so forth. I mean, it's just, that's just the way this whole study is. Everything gets used again and again and again.
But that's helpful with learning.
Well, isn't it?
Having it repeat.
Yes, 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 it's ideal. It's ideal, and that's why I keep challenging you all and encouraging you to experience these things, not to conceptualize them. Because your concepts won't help you much when we go to using those knowledge, but your experiences will. So, if there are no other questions, that is a wrap as far as I'm concerned. If someone spoke, go ahead.
It's actually, Alan, I have to ask you a question that has nothing to do with class. So just before you hang up.
Okay. And was it Randy that somebody wanted to ask something? Was Tom or Randy?
It's Randy. In fact, Helen and I got a little confused when we were working last week with the color chips. We can only find three blue color chips. One seems to be electric blue.
That is true.
And then there's another one which seems to be a deep water blue. I mean, the black. Yeah, real deep water blue.
Right, and then there's one that's just water blue, which is a little deeper than...
A little deeper than sky blue.
Right, right. But there is a sky blue, right?
Yes, and there's a sky blue. But
yeah.
It seems like there was one of the waters that was missing. There was only two waters.
Yeah, we don't provide blue-black.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay.
Yeah. Which would be almost like an indigo.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can, I mean, if you want to build your own colors, which you can, if you like a little different tone or whatever, go to a paint store.
Oh, okay.
But we've researched a lot to get these colors together and but also, the water blue, you could use a more watery water blue. The reason that water blue is not very deep is because a lot of people tend so easily to go deeper. We were sort of trying to be a little protective.
Yeah. Well, it seems to be, to me, it seems to be deeper than it should be.
Maybe the one that's in there now. At one point, I remember we had one that was just a little bit deeper than sky blue.
Oh.
And that was sort of, and then I think we went a little deeper. So,
oh, okay.
Like, if you want one that's a little brighter, just go to a paint store and get one.
Okay.
right. No, I'm fine.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Okay, so then everyone but Helen, I say good night.
All right.
Good night.